Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
It is our fourth and final hour this week here on 95.7 The Game. It was a week where we saw the Warriors suffer one of the most embarrassing playoff defeats in NBA history to rebound with a virtuoso Durant performance and an overall team performance that left everybody feeling like, okay, redemption, found it in Game 3, back to normal. At least that's what we hope we're seeing, to find out if that's the truth or if there's a little allusion to that. I mean, Warriors have, what, 2-3 days off in L.A.? Is that, two days at least. Tonight, Saturday night. They got a Friday night and a Saturday night all to themselves in L.A., and I've seen that kick the Warriors' ass. I've actually seen that happen. To talk about it all, Mark Medina from the Bay Area News Group, the Mark, good enough to join Ray Ratto and yours truly here on 95.7 The Game. Also saw your karaoke, and then I see you on Colin Cowherd. Thanks so much for coming on today. Really appreciate it, Medina.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk with you. I'm not sure if Ray feels the same way, but hopefully he'll at least tolerate me for a few minutes.
Oh, get on with it.
Yeah. very good performance last night. Afterwards, Durant was saying that, hey, you know, coach just called my play, called my number. Afterwards, we had Kerr saying, well, he was just more aggressive. So what was it? Was it plays called or was it aggressive?
I think it was the things weren't mutually exclusive. Steve actually elaborated today on a team off day that, yes, he did draw up some more plays, but the overriding message that Steve had about Kevin, it wasn't so much of he needs him to take those 20 or 30 shots. That was the soundbite. But the main message he was talking about with Kevin is he wanted him to play more aggressively than he did in Game 2. And there's no question. He played much more aggressively in Game 3. I think it was only like 42 seconds into the game when he got his first shot. And by the middle of the second quarter, he had already exceeded his shot totals that he had in Game 2 with those 8 field goal attempts. So I think the interesting question moving forward is, to what extent will Kevin try to be a scorer, try to be a playmaker? He's always said that, oh, he simply takes what the defense gives him. But when I see him play, it seems much more nuanced than that because it seems like he also has a certain plan of attack of what kind of game he wants to have.
Is it that, or is it that, I mean, I accept the fact that I don't think he takes what the defense gives him because he can do what he wants. I get the sense, and I certainly got the sense last night, that what he did was take what the rest of the offense allows him, that he worked within the framework better and as a result got anything he wanted to get. And because he wants to work within the framework, it all came out better for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you hit. And, you know, picking Kevin's brain on what his thought process is with the offense, he'll be the first to admit without any kind of coded message that his first option in his mind is always to try to find Steph and Klay with the best shot. And if that's not the case, he'll look for his own. I think where there's sometimes some points of frustration is that there's a few times that he feels like that ball movement philosophy comes at the expense of him getting a pretty good look in isolation when Steph and Klay aren't getting open shots. But the feeling that I get watching it game to game, those are subtle things that may pop up from time to time. But because of how good the Warriors are, usually the law of averages with how much Steph and Klay and Kevin get their looks pretty much even out. I think the the average field goal attempts for all those guys are just under 20. So as much as there is talk about, you know, when is it time for Kevin to get his look or not, it has a way of sorting itself out that in the big picture there is pretty much a balance for the most part.
Mark Medina from the Merck. I don't want to lead the witness. I'm just going to ask you point blank. What do you think of the whistles on both sides? The whistles that the Warriors are getting, the whistles the Clippers are getting in this series.
Yeah, I think there's definitely questionable ones on both sides. And I think in Game 3 in particular, it just felt like it really disrupted the game. And that's, I think, one of the things that sometimes gets lost in translation with the officials. Certainly, when you talk to players and fans, you know, they often view it through the lens of, is that team benefiting from the calls? But I think the larger issue that I have with officials is that, one, there's not always a level of consistency of, hey, is this game going to be tightly called, or are they going to let them play? It seems like it changes a lot throughout the game. And then number two, as much as there is a rule book that the officials are supposed to follow in theory, I would argue that the most important job description that the officials have is to ensure the continuity and flow of a game where it feels like it's running like a river almost, and there's not that constant stopping and disrupting the momentum. And clearly, in Game 3, it did not feel like that way at all.
Well, how much of that, though, is the fact that you have such contrasting styles between these two teams makes it hard to find consistency? Because every possession is, you know, at least in Game 2, I thought, was it's basically, you know, it's a struggle to establish how you want the game to be played. If both teams are going up and down, those are easy. If
right.
they're making their shots, it's easy because there aren't rebounding calls to worry about. But if you've got a grinder team and an up-tempo team that seeks out the elegant way through every play, I think that's why you're getting what you're getting in this series. And it's a little bit why you're getting what you're getting in the Philadelphia-Brooklyn series, too.
No, I think that's a great point. And I think at the beginning of the series, that style, relatively speaking, because the Warriors obviously are much more talented and they have a 2-1 series lead, but the way it was called at the beginning of the series, it allowed the Clippers to muck it up a lot more. And in that aspect, it kind of played to the Clippers' advantage where certain things weren't called as much. But in Game 3, it seemed like that they disrupted the Clippers' efforts in getting to that, where, you know, Patrick Beverley specifically was getting called for a lot more fouls. And as much as Steve might be harping on the refs about individual calls here or there, he actually thought in the totality of things that the way Game 3 was officiated ultimately benefited the Warriors, and Doc Rivers would agree with that as well. He was saying that very early on in the game, he turned to one of his assistants and said, the way this game is being called is not going to work out in our favor because it kind of disrupted the Clippers' strategy of trying to make the Warriors, you know, play through mud, so to speak.
The good news today for the Warriors is those double techs were rescinded, so Kevin Durant is back to 5 that he gets to play with. And it's not worse than that right now. So let's keep it that way, hopefully. Mark Medina from Los Angeles. Bogut might have played his best playoff game with the Warriors, and he wasn't even on the team a month ago. That was impressive. And look, I am in no way trying to kick a man while he's down, but in terms of styles make fights, Bogut fits better with the starting five than DeMarcus Cousins did. Obviously, DeMarcus can run a second unit. He can be a primary scorer. Bogut can't do that. But in an odd way, is there an addition by the subtraction of DeMarcus for this first unit?
You know, I think in the short term there is, simply because Andrew knows a lot more of the schemes, and as much as has been out of the NBA, he feels a lot lighter and he feels in better conditioning, where DeMarcus, as much as he had made a lot of progress ever since he came back from his Achilles in late January, that was still an ongoing issue. I think the intriguing question is, how does this play out long term? You know, with DeMarcus, the Warriors' view is always about later on in the playoffs, this is where he's going to be at his best because he's going to shed off the last layers of rust when it comes to matching up against a Joel Embiid or, a Clint Capella, DeMarcus could be really good. And I think when you juxtapose that with Andrew Bogut, there is, I think, some open questions of, to what extent can he lengthen his minutes? I mean, the reason why the Warriors were so comfortable with signing Andrew Bogut earlier was that it was under the guise of he would be an insurance policy. He wouldn't be playing significant minutes, and now it's going to be a lot more. Right now, he's healthier, he's slimmed down, and the fact that there's fewer games in Australia with more recovery time, he's fine. But I'm interested to see if he reach or hits a wall, so to speak. But so far, so good. He knows what's going on, and he does all those little things with the rebounds and setting screens and, playing good defense that makes all the other all-star jobs a lot easier.
I just wonder if, this next series is the one where they sort of have to use him more judiciously, just because whether he's playing against Gobert or the combination of Capella and Fareed might hasten that process of wearing him down a bit.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I think specifically with Houston, presuming that's the team, you're going to see, I think, a lot more Kevon Looney and Jordan Bell, simply because that's what Steve Kerr went last season, where obviously no one's going to stop James Harden, but he really felt like Kevon Looney handled that responsibility relatively well of the switches and not getting baited into too much foul trouble. And then he just felt like Jordan Bell's athleticism really matched what Houston brings. But that's going to be an interesting process, specifically with Jordan Bell, because, as you know, guys, he just has not been, I think, viewed in the greatest light under Steve Kerr because of his consistency, some of his incidents, with the hotel room charge and just his overall maturity. And when I asked Steve before the game, where is he on the depth chart when accounting for DeMarcus is going to be out? Steve Kerr basically listed every possibility or center before Jordan Bell, where he said Andrew Bogut's a starting center, Kevon Looney's gained some minutes, he might give some time to Draymond Green at center, might get some time for Jonas Jerebko. Oh, and if there's a matchup that warrants it, Jordan Bell might get some scraps. And of course, Steve Kerr said that in the nicest terms possible, but when you read between the lines, it does not look like Jordan's going to get much time in this series beyond mop-up duty. But at some point, I would think that Steve would want to transition Jordan into the next series, presumably against Houston, because that's where he would find it more appropriate because of those matchups.
So for the rest of this series, Jordan Bell's candle has been extinguished.
Yes, and you can say that Mike Brown blew it out.
There you go. Very, very good. Mark, one real quick final question for you, because, these guys are more loyal to each other making a good paycheck than they are to any one franchise. And Andre Iguodala, who clearly loves the Golden State Warriors, said that, "I hope Kevon Looney goes to another team so he can get all the money that he wants." I guess Andre doesn't realize that the Warriors aren't quite handcuffed in the financial situation they were with Looney last year. He's got bird rights. They can pay him whatever they want, tax withstanding.
Yeah, I think that was Andre kind of being a little bit facetious and also, maybe maximizing the market leverage that maybe Kevon Looney will have. But the Warriors are certainly bracing for it. Steve Kerr went very strong today at his media availability, saying that he hopes that the Warriors do whatever it takes to sign him, and that was certainly a different sentiment last year, where as he was making a lot of good progress throughout the postseason, the Warriors were very fearful that they wouldn't be able to afford Kevon Looney, and they wouldn't go the extra mile to do that because they were so strapped financially, where beyond that $5.3 million exception, they really only had veteran minimum deals. But I don't want to say I was surprised about this reality, because it was a pretty depressed market last summer. But when I talked to Kevon Looney about his free agency, he said that he had received exactly zero offers. He had some interest from Houston, the Clippers, Atlanta, but it was never enough for him to even get a veteran's minimum deal. I was just very surprised by that. So the Warriors should be thanking their lucky stars that no other teams gave them that offer, because Kevon Looney said, "Hey, if someone offered some money, I would have to listen to it. I'm a young player. You want to carve out a bigger contract, but They made it a very easy decision for him to come back. But I think because of how his steady growth has been, with always being dependable in different roles, and the fact that he has, you know, grown at a pretty good rate with having somewhat of a dependable mid-range game, the Warriors are going to do what it can, because there's very few other options within that young core where they really feel high on any of them.
When was the last time a coach said in a presser, "I really hope we can't afford that guy because I'm sick of looking at him"?
I think that's never happened, and especially Steve Kerr. But I think Steve has a way of doing that by not saying anything at all,
yeah,
right? Or saying, "Hey, it's going to be really hard, and we'll see. It's a business." I think the fact that he spoke very glowingly shows, I think, something else. If Steve Kerr had negative thoughts about Kevon, he would just hide behind the guise of, "Oh, we'll see. That's Bob's job," and he'll kind of deflect and defer.
Mark, thank you. Go get yourself a hot pastrami at Langer's and bill it to me, okay?
All righty. I'm going to go to Boa. Can I still bill that to you?
No.
Okay, never mind.
Thank you very much. Mark Medina here on 95.7 The Game from the Bay Area News Group. By the way, he talked about Kerr gushing over Looney last night. He was right.
I was terrified all last year after we denied the option that we were going to lose him, because I thought he was great last year, but it was a bad free agent market for the players last summer, and people just didn't have money. So we got lucky in terms of being able to keep him, and he's turned into such a good player for us, and I'm really, really hoping that we can keep him long term, and that we can give him the contract he deserves, that he can make some good money, and we can enjoy having him on our team for many years.
I've enjoyed watching this guy's career arc, Ray. I thought he was a bust. I really did, and I thought it was a bust beyond hip limitation coming back from surgery. I just didn't think he had explosion. I didn't think he was athletic enough to really be an impactful NBA player. And Kevon Looney has proven me wrong. He's proven a lot of the doubters wrong. The guy is a testament to sticking to it and hard work. I don't think he'd be a great free agent. I don't know if he'd be a great any other NBA team, but he is an integral part of the Golden State Warriors. He's a perfect fit.
No, I don't dispute that, but I think there are a lot of places that could use him, as long as they're not requiring him to be a 30-minute plus guy.
Right.
I mean, he's a guy who absolutely can give almost any team quality post minutes.
Right, he'd have a 12-year-long NBA career just being a garbage man, glass man, rebounder.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think he's Warrior specific. I think he's got game that a lot of teams could adapt with.
Well, the Warriors certainly need his game. He's a big part of their success when he's out there, and his improvements over the years have just been remarkable. More from Steve Kerr.
He's gotten better and better. You can see the confidence growing every game. I don't know what he's shooting in this series, probably about 80% or something. But, you know, a lot of dunks, a lot of putbacks, but also making that mid-range shot. So this is the best he's played in his career, and it makes sense. It's his fourth year, I think. The first two were pretty much a wash just because, you know, the injuries. So it's his second year really playing and being part of the rotation. Generally, that's when you see a player really blossom, you know, after he's sort of gotten his feet wet, and then, you know, now he can really focus on improving his game every night.
Steve didn't have all of Looney's series numbers in front of him. That's okay. I do. He's played 53 minutes, scored 35 points on 14 of 17 shooting. I mean, that's about as good as it gets. He has done everything they've asked him to do, and that's what led Andre Iguodala to say this post game about Looney's future.
I hope he gets paid, so I hope he doesn't come back, because I hope he gets all the money.
I hope he gets all the money, and I think maybe Andre was under the impression that he needs to go somewhere to get all the money, or maybe Andre just doesn't think that the Warriors are going to turn him into a $5 or $6 million a year player.
No, I think he looks.
I think he will be.
I think Andre Iguodala is looking at a team that is going to be cap strangled for a while. I mean, because they've got to make hard choices, not just Kevin Durant-based, but a lot of them. And I think what he was saying was, I hope he gets to a situation where he has better financial leverage than he has here.
I hope Joe Lacob's smart enough to go deep into the tax to keep players who fit perfectly on his roster, and I think he's committed to winning like a crazy man, and will do just that. I mean, he's already on record saying money's not going to break up the Golden State Warriors.
Well, except that it is going to break up the Golden State Warriors at some point just because it has to.
Right. At some point, I mean, it becomes untenable.
You cannot pay a full team roster salary in tax. It's not practical because, among other things, it forces you to make choices and never be able to adapt to them. You know, if somebody goes down, you can't add anybody if you're so tax strangled that you can't.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, the tax works in two ways. One, it's expensive. And two, it ties a general manager's hands. So to a certain extent, he's wrong about that.
We're going to be taking it to the tweets. We're going to be doing it in just a minute. When we come on back, need you to go to the Twitters. Get on the hashtag to the tweets. Any question that you may have, that is coming up with yours truly and Ray Ratto here on 95.7 The Game. We were asking the what-if movie question that was going around online earlier today. Joe San Ramon called in to twist scenarios. Joe, what's your what-if?
Hey, guys. Really love the show. Ray, you're the coolest cat on radio.
That's disturbing.
So here's my question. I think this might be the best one. So in the movie A League of Their Own, what if Dottie Henson does not drop the ball? What happens to Kit?
Oh,
the way they have that character wired, like Damon, you were talking about darkness. The way they had that character wired up, she's like ignoring the signal at third base. If she ends up being the goat of that game, the bad goat,
yeah.
What happens even at the reunion?
I don't know. Look at it this way. Kit did not handle the press conference well. Kit did not handle criticism very well. It would have been a nightmare for her, a living, breathing nightmare. And obviously, Dottie goes on to be enshrined in Cooperstown.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I've thought about that's like one of the for me. It's like one of the hardest movies. I love that movie, but watching the ending always drives me crazy. But I almost think they had to write it that way because if they didn't, I don't know what happens to Kit. I think they just couldn't. I don't know if Penny Marshall wanted to go down that road with her.
Joe, dirt in the skirt. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Well done all the way around. Again, in all these scenarios, I haven't heard anyone go darker than mine. What if Air Bud misses the game-winning shot and he's shipped off to a Michael Vick dog farm to be a bait animal, and that's what you get for losing the NBA Finals, Air Bud?
What if the dog in Sandlot caught up to Benny the Jet Rodriguez?
Oh, and like ate him guts
ate
alive?
Yeah, ripped his guts apart. That's pretty dark.
Yeah, that's a little darker than Sandlot probably intended. I like it. I like it.
You guys have way too much time on your hands.
We do.
I'm out there curing diseases, and you're watching movies. I misspoke. I'm out spreading diseases.
There we go. I knew there was something wrong about that statement.
They call me Johnny Leprosy.
There you go. Folks, if you got any prophylactics, put them on right now.
That's not what I meant.
I know, but it's always good to be safe, Ray. And I meant gloves. I mean, get your mind out of the gutter. Please, we're interested in a sanitary program. We definitely want a sanitary to the tweets. You need to get on the Twitter right now. At me, at Ray, at the station. Use the hashtag to the tweets. And that is what we're coming on back with, a little to the tweets for a fun Friday wrap up. After Elena, let you know what's coming up next.
Not everyone has time to make a phone call, but everyone has time to tweet. Tweet at Damon Bruce right now. It's Taking It to the Tweets. Tweets. Now, here's Damon.
Oh, yeah. This is one of my favorite segments because you never know where it's coming from. You never know where the punch is coming from. It's coming from Twitter. We do know that. Any question you got for yours truly or Ray, and these first two are specifically for Ray. First one, Ray, is from a guy named Steven who says, have you ever considered teaching a course in sports journalism or writing?
No.
Would you ever consider teaching a course in writing?
If the money's right. Or if they paid me in vast amounts of wine. Those jobs have not yet come open.
Would you like to give any person listening who is an aspiring writer right now one free tip?
Don't pay for your drinks. Get somebody else to do it.
That is, I mean, any walk of life. I don't care if you're a writer or a drinker. That's really good.
But you have access to more rich people if you're a writer, and you can basically sponge off them forever.
This is from Caesar. Caesar says, and this is totally for you, Ray, because I couldn't answer this question any more I could about your journalistic teaching interests. Is Messi the greatest soccer player of all time?
No, but he's in a very small group with Pelé, Maradona, Cruyff, and Beckenbauer.
He's among the greatest to have ever played.
Yeah. If you have an all-11 for all time and you don't have him on it, you're an idiot.
There you go. I was incapable of answering that. By the way, Ray's presence doesn't necessarily meaning, you know, asking you to submit your soccer questions, so let's not get it twisted. Let's see. This is definitely for me. Hey, D. Bruce, you still listening to X-Clan? Oh, come on. Of course. Of course I'm still listening to X-Clan. Stomping. Walking in my big black boots. Living off the earth, eating herbs and fruits. Come on. Always listen to X-Clan. It's good for the soul. This is from Savan. What's the status with the post-Game of Thrones? Oh, I'll be going through it on Monday. Unfortunately, Gianna's on maternity leave, which means either Ray's going to have to power watch the entire 7-season episode up till Monday, or
Elena?
We'll have to involve Elena.
Elena.
What about Kolsky?
Or is Kolsky back? Is he back from the broken ankle? Not his broken ankle. His wife's broken ankle. I guess she pulled a straight up, like, Gordon Hayward level of broken ankle, and it's been rough.
Ew. So,
yeah, I feel terrible. Terrible for her. Damon, has Beverly learned his lesson not to call out a legend like Kevin Durant? That is from Anthony. No.
No, and why should he?
Yeah, if I'm Beverly, I am upping the pesky actions, talking, language. I'm becoming more of a nuisance as the series goes further. Not less of a nuisance. I'm not making this easier on Kevin Durant,
no,
ever.
But it's also not his choice, because he wanted to be every bit the pest in Game 3 that he was in Game 2, and the Warriors figured out a way to neutralize that. I mean, there are only so many things that Patrick Beverley or any defender can do when facing superior talent.
This is from Eric, who says, are the Rockets the biggest roadblock to the Dubs three-peat, or will it be whoever comes out of the East? It's got to be the Rockets, because you got to fear what you know more than what you don't know. No matter who comes out of the East, whoever it is, beyond it being the Boston Celtics, and even they would be pushing this definition, they're not experienced enough. They have not been to the – normally, to win a championship, you got to knock on the door, stand on the front porch for a little while before you're let in. The Warriors just jump cut the front of the line and started winning titles like it was an easy thing to do. The Rockets, clearly, I think, are the team to be worried about more than whatever might come out of the East, because I know what the Rockets are. I don't know what coming out of the East is yet.
They have no fear. I mean, if you're talking about big time, large stage playoff experience, nobody in the East is going to concern them. They'll be concerned because the team they face in the East has got great players, but not because they know how to deal with the bright light.
This is from Jano. Tweet tweet. Jano says, with the Blue Jays in town, would you think it's possible that the A's discuss a trade with the Jays for Marcus Stroman? It's a little early in the year, I think, for the A's to be discussing trades, but I wouldn't put it past them at all. It's not the time of the year where you see an awful lot of movement from anybody other than Farhan Zaidi. So it's probably not going to happen.
Hey, And I don't know that Marcus Stroman has the same cachet that he had a couple of years ago.
I don't think he does either.
I mean, he has not been able to make a bad Blue Jays team good. And that's probably not within his power anyway. But I think that's an early July talk. It's not now.
By the way, I got to say.
By the way, the Leafs are leading 2-0.
Oh, well, then maybe we can get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at Rogers Center on the original plan date after all. But
and Toronto beat Orlando, so it might be a big night on Yonge
Street. Is that game final now?
That's a final.
That's a final. Yeah.
98-93. So Toronto, I don't believe Toronto covered.
No, they didn't. They did not blow anybody out of the water. Look at that. Orlando, the scrappy, scrappy Orlando Magic.
It will be gone over the weekend.
Pascal Siakam, 30 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists for him. He had a good game tonight. So I got to say this about the full-page ad that the A's took out today, congratulating KD on staying in Oakland. Obviously, they wanted to have fun with the initials KD. Outside of me only being not clever at all, but using it for the sake of they were both in the news on the same day, you know, we jokingly said, one KD stays in Oakland. No one has ever called Chris Davis, not a single A's fan, not a single A's teammate. It's not his nickname. He is not known as KD. To thank KD in a sports paper, in the sports pages, on the same day where the actual KD, as in Kevin Durant, is on the front page of it, it's just not a good look. Also,
First of all, the ad came in before they knew what happened last night. Those ads don't magically appear like right at deadline.
Right, but you knew Kevin Durant was playing the Clippers this week or approximately around this time.
No, the real problem with the ad, frankly, is it's picking a fight or just a sort of it's poking rhetorical fun at somebody that you're not competing with. If you wanted to make a case for, you know, making an ad out of signing Chris Davis, I think your target is probably the Giants because that's the team that you want to irritate because they don't notice you. And I don't know how you would do it because I don't make ads and I don't care. But, you know, the Warriors are not your target audience.
No. And if I weren't in radio, I'd probably be in advertising. Advertising mesmerizes me. Like the psychology behind it, a good ad, I really appreciate it. I thought the best ad the A's ever ran was when what was at the time a construction project in China Basin. The A's over you'd come off the Bay Bridge and they had a billboard that said, they're building a ballpark, we're building a team. And now you desperately need a ballpark, but that's besides the point. But I thought that was a nice little shot at the Giants. But they used an orange backdrop for their thanking KD. And who are you thanking? Like, first of all, you don't even have big enough fan base to send out things like that that don't have any information about upcoming home games, especially this weekend being a 2-for-1 ticket special, especially this weekend where 10% of every whatever purchase or $10 or $2 or whatever it is going to go support Make-A-Wish. Like, put some details in your frickin' advertisement.
You could take another ad out for that. That I don't have a problem with them not including that.
They don't take any ads out. They took one
ad
out this
year. They take ads out.
It's just the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
It's not the dumbest thing you've ever seen. Think about the dumb things you've seen this week, and I know it's not in the top five.
It's among them. It's absolutely among them. Hold on. We got a call. This is from Drew in Oakland. Drew, how are you?
Hey, happy Good Friday, guys. Just real fast, as an A's ticket, I buy A's tickets, and they sent out an email to everybody yesterday saying that KD signs extension to stay in Oakland. So just that. And then the other one is I was thinking about it. What if Booby Miles had the opportunity to get an MRI and rehab his ACL, and who would have knows what happened to the Panthers then? If it happened today,
I can't pick up the movie. What movie are you talking about?
Friday Night Lights. Remember Booby Miles, the running back?
Oh yeah. So Perriman doesn't go on to win. Is that what you're telling me? Or no, Perriman maybe they do win.
They win, yeah.
That's right. Thank you, Drew. I appreciate it.
Yeah, but do they cover?
Because if you're not betting on Texas high school football, what kind of a football fan are you really? 888-957-9570. One more segment before we tip the cap, tell you what's coming up next, and we say goodbye. And if you wanted to sneak in one last to the tweet, now would be the time. We'll come on back and wrap it all up here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Rick Tittle and Ryan Covey coming up next here on 95.7 The Game. We want to say thanks so much to Monty Poole for joining us today, and thanks Jeff Passan for making a surprise appearance almost out of thin air. Also want to thank Mark Medina for joining us today. We want to wrap up with just a couple last to the tweets. And again, a lot of these are coming in specifically for you, Ray. They want to know what kicks you rock. Are you a Under Armour, Nike, Adidas, maybe Clay Thompson? You rocking Antas?
U.S. Keds.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with those.
No, I whatever fit my feet. I don't. I'm not a kicks guy.
Not a sneaker. No brand loyalty on the feet.
No. What? My feet are more important than on the inside than the outside.
Ratto, can I hang out with you at the Warrior-Houston playoff game in round two if I pay for your ticket into Oracle?
I get in for free.
Sounds like a definitive no.
Oh, no, it's an aggressive no. It's an almost embittered no. I mean, I don't even want to go with me. Going with this guy, no.
Are the Dubs going to wrap up this series in five and get ready for the Rockets next? That comes from Will. Yeah, Will. I mean, it looks like we're back on path here. And I know, Ray, you cautioned about a game four letdown. The Warriors have been known to take their eye off the ball. I think Steve Kerr's done a good job preaching the religion into him about this one.
I didn't caution about a game four letdown. I said that game four suddenly becomes huge if they lose game three, but they did game three the way they're supposed to. So yeah, I think this is done.
You know, I actually misunderstood what you were saying. I thought that you were saying they're going to win game three, which means they might relax in game four, and that could be the Clippers coming back.
Yeah, but the way they won changed it.
Yeah.
If they had scraped by in game three, I'd say, well, maybe the Clippers are a much tougher match than I thought. But what we saw is when the Warriors are focused at both ends of the floor and running their offense so that nobody is highlighted, that way everybody is highlighted, then the Clippers can't hang. There's a reason why they're the 8 seed.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!